12. Centuries earlier, and surprisingly near the spot where Gilbert and Sid moored their dirigible, in the immense, window-lined, grand gallery of a massive golden castle, Martin and Gwen celebrated their just-completed wedding vows, aided by their closest friends. All of them wore costumes themed to David Lynch's 1984 film, Dune. In an out-of-the-way corner of the upper gallery, well out of the wedding party's line of sight and concealed by shadows, Gilbert and Sid stood with Maddie and Brewster, watching the festivities.
"What year did you say this was again?"
Maddie asked.
"It's 1457, Gilbert replied.
Brewster asked, "And how did Mom and Dad get here?"
"They found the file."
"Separately,"
Sid added.
"My understanding is your father found the file, made some sort of hideous mess of it, and had to go hide in medieval England. That's where he met your mother."
"Mom's from medieval England?" Brewster asked.
"No," Sid said. "I believe she's from the 20-teens. She was just living in medieval England at the time, so is Philip, come to think of it."
"That's where you all met," Brewster said.
"No," Gilbert said. "We don't visit the Dark Ages much. Not very fond of roughing it, no. We'll meet your parents a few years later on, and hundreds of years earlier, in Atlantis."
Brewster said,
"I'm sorry, what?
You don't really mean Atlantis.
Not the ancient lost city of Atlantis."
"Yes. When I said Atlantis, I meant Atlantis. That's why I called it Atlantis."
"It's real?"
Sid said.
"That depends on what you mean by real, and what you mean by Atlantis."
"But yes," Gilbert said, "there was at one time a city called Atlantis. I believe your mother lived there for a while."
"That's where your parents first met us,"
Sid said.
"We'd met them before," Gilbert added, "but that was later on."
"You two enjoy confusing people, don't you?" Maddie asked. Sid smiled.
"Would we have become magicians if we didn't?"
"Why would a guy from the future think he could hide in the past?" Brewster asked.
"Good question. He came here, they all came here, to pose as wizards as a cover for using the file to give themselves powers."
Maddie furrowed her brow.
"They hid their powers by claiming to have magical powers?"
Sid said, "Exactly.
If you're in the modern world and someone happens to catch you levitating in thin air, you'll end up drugged in a government lab somewhere. In the Dark Ages, if someone catches you levitating, they'll assume you know magic, and while they may desire to burn you at the stake, they'll be far too afraid of you to attempt it."
Gilbert said,
"And if they do, you can levitate away without having to worry about some chav with a smartphone uploading you to YouTube and making you famous. Yeah, the only people who got burned at the stake for witchcraft were the ones who didn't have magic."
Sid nodded.
"Such is the irony of life."
"And that's why you pretend to be magicians," Maddie said. Sid's eyes went wide and his voice raised an octave.
"I beg your pardon? We may hold your parents in rather high esteem on a personal level, but what we are doing is a very different thing from what they do. They deceive people and pretend to be wizards to cover for their powers. We went to the trouble to learn stage magic and develop an act. We aren't pretending to be magicians. We genuinely are magicians, and we take it seriously."
Gilbert put a hand on Sid's shoulder and took over talking while his partner calmed down.
"We take a different approach than your folks. Let's just leave it at that for the moment. So, kids, not everybody gets to see their parents' wedding. What do you think of their big day?"
Maddie said,
"Our parents' big day, Gilbert, was at Blood Ridge, on Glapflap's third moon, against the Gromflamites."
Gilbert and Sid both stared at Maddie. Brewster said,
"It's from a show.
Rick and Morty, they were at a wedding and Gilbert cut him off.
Yeah, we're familiar with Rick and Morty. Being a time traveler means infinite free time to binge-watch cartoons. It's just, hearing you say that made me realize you two don't make a lot of pop culture references.
Maddie motioned toward the wedding below. Look down there. Down below, Martin used his powers to make a piñata shaped like Baron Vladimir Harkonnen rise up and down as a blindfolded Gwen swiped at it with a wizard staff, and all of their friends cheered and ate pieces of a cake shaped like a sandworm. Brewster said, "When you're raised by our dad, not constantly referring to some TV show or movie is a way to rebel." "What a bunch of dorks," Maddie said. "Quiet," said Sid. Brewster said, "I don't know. They aren't hurting anyone, but it's all kind of self-indulgent, isn't it?" Maddie shrugged. "It is their wedding day." "I understand that it's their wedding. I just didn't expect it to be a big, extravagant party like this that's just meant to impress their friends." Maddie laughed. "You didn't expect that? Are you sure you understand what a wedding is? I just didn't think they'd be so frivolous." Gilbert put a reassuring hand on Brewster's back. "Don't judge them too harshly. They were young." Maddie glared down at Philip, who stood by smiling and joking in his Mentat costume. "I'm just surprised that they invited an enemy to their wedding," Sid said. "Just because they might be enemies now doesn't mean they always were, does it? Anyway, we promised to show you how Martin and Gwen were when they were younger. We didn't promise that you'd like them, or that what you saw would make sense."
Gilbert nodded. "You need to have a real understanding of who your parents are if you're going to have a chance at saving them."
"And some conception of who your enemy is, or at least the person you believe to be your enemy," Sid said. "Look, kids, we've known both your parents and Philip for quite some time, and looking at this, can you see why we're both certain that Philip wouldn't hurt your parents? Or at least, if he did, he'd need to have a bloody good reason. He's an old, dear friend to both of them. He's your father's best man." "Or," Maddie said, "he's just pretending to be their friend the entire time, and he's fooled Dad into making him best man."
"Yeah," Brewster agreed. "And that makes all this even worse, doesn't it?"
Gilbert and Sid both sighed.
Sid said, "This certainly seems to have boomeranged on us."
"Yeah. Oh well. If one thing doesn't work, you try something else. Come on, kids. I've got an idea. And the best part is, you're going to get to take a break from learning about magic to help us perform an illusion."
Centuries later, and about halfway across town, Gilbert and Sid stood on the stage of their theater, resplendent in their customary tuxedos, top hats, and capes. Sid stood straight and tall on his mark behind the closed curtains, while Gilbert stood where the two curtains met, using his hands to simultaneously hold the curtains closed while opening a small gap to peek through. In the wings to the magician's left, Maddie and Brewster stood, wearing black velvet robes and white porcelain masks pulled up on their heads like hats. Sid said,
"Our audience of one shall arrive at any moment. We've rehearsed. You both know what to do and when to do it. Stay relaxed and you'll be fine. There's no need for nervousness."
Maddie said,
"We aren't nervous. We're irritated."
Gilbert said,
"No problem there. I've done some of my best shows while irritated."
Sid said,
"And I while irritating him."
"True that."
Maddie asked,
"Why didn't you tell us that we're doing this trick as a favor to Philip to begin with? There's no way we'd have spent all afternoon practicing if we'd known that."
Sid said,
"I do so love it when they answer their own questions."
Brewster scowled.
"When did Philip put you two up to this anyway? You said he hasn't been in contact in days."
Gilbert said,
"He asked us to do this years ago."
"And you're only just doing it now?" Maddie asked.
Sid said,
"He told us that there was no rush. He knew for a fact that we would get around to it eventually because Martin had told him we already had."
Gilbert said, "As Brewster pointed out before, time travel makes it easy to procrastinate, which is good. You usually need the extra time just to figure out what's going on."
"Besides," Sid said, "we couldn't perform the illusion as it was described to us until we procured two assistants we could fully trust. Life's irony never ceases to amaze. We were unable to do this favor for Philip until you two came along, and you wouldn't be here if not for your deep and abiding distrust for Philip."
Maddie and Brewster both opened their mouths to speak, but stopped short when Gilbert said, "Whoop, Martin's here." Gilbert stepped backward to stand on his mark beside Sid, and he pointed at the twins. Maddie gritted her teeth as she threw a large knife switch bolted to the wall. As the points made contact, the house lights went out and two spotlights blazed to life. Brewster hauled on a loop of rope stretched between two pulleys on the floor and ceiling, making the stage curtains part, revealing Gilbert and Sid in all of their glory. Out in the seats, Martin groaned, "Oh, Lord." Sid addressed Martin with his customary verbosity, interrupted occasionally with a few friendly syllables from Gilbert or an angry question from Martin himself. Brewster and Maddie listened intently to all of it, waiting only for their cue. Finally, Sid waved his walking stick slash magic wand in the prearranged pattern while flourishing with his free hand. Maddie threw a second knife switch that flooded the entire stage with light, and Brewster hit the play button on a large CD-powered boombox that blasted out a recording of a small brass ensemble performing the song "The Final Countdown" by Europe. They both lowered their white porcelain masks, raised their hoods, and rushed out onto the stage, pushing a steamer trunk on casters and a wheeled frame suspending a red velvet curtain. In the ensuing 2 minutes, the four of them performed a complex, carefully choreographed magic trick that involved locking Gilbert in the trunk, swapping masks, Gilbert and Sid switching places through a false back, and a lot of arm waving. At the end of the trick, Sid stood in the now open trunk with a message to Martin from Philip, embroidered on the back of his robe. Gilbert sat behind Martin in a position carefully chosen to allow Gilbert to accidentally startle him. Brewster stood in the wings, and Maddie hid in a secret compartment beneath the stage. She stayed crouched beneath the trap door, listening to her father talking with Gilbert and Sid, until she was given the signal that Martin had left and it was okay to come out. The curtain made opening the trap door a bit of a challenge, but she managed it. She removed her mask and the robe as she stood up and stepped out of the hidden compartment beneath the stage floor. Brewster walked out onto the stage, also shedding his mask and robe as he went. Sid stepped out of the steamer trunk and began removing his robe with a special message embroidered on its back.
"Martin, you're embarrassing yourself. Just drop it. Philip."
That was the first time the twins had seen the younger version of their father up close and not wearing a Freeman stillsuit. Sid couldn't help asking,
"So, that was him. What did you think?"
Maddie said,
"He was so young."
"And angry," Brewster added. "Really angry."
Sid said,
"Indeed. I'm sure he's mellowed with age. Most men do."
"They get wiser and stop letting things bother them?" Brewster asked.
Gilbert said,
"No, things bother them more. It's just that they don't have the energy to act on it like they used to."
"Whatever. I just don't see what the point of this was. Why did you show us this? We got to see Philip tormenting Dad. What does that prove?"
Maddie said,
"It's worse. We saw you torment our dad for Philip, and you got us to help."
"What?"
Gilbert sputtered,
Did you not read the writing on my back? Could you not hear what Martin said? I mean, they do have a tendency to mess with each other, but at the end of the day, they are the best of friends. Even here, as you just saw, Philip jerked Martin around and wasted his time, but he did it because Martin's making himself look foolish, and Philip's trying to warn him off of it.
Brewster said, "Or maybe Dad's getting close to figuring out what Philip's up to, and he's trying to throw Dad off."
Sid smiled down at Gilbert from the stage and said,
"I believe the proper American vernacular for this scenario would be strike two."
Maddie, Brewster, Gilbert, and Sid materialized. At first, all the twins could see was that they'd appeared outside, in the dark, behind a tree. A quick look around revealed that they had also appeared in front of another tree, and beside one as well. They both spun around for a moment, taking in the forest that almost surrounded them. The trees and ground plants thinned in front of them, and in the distance, a few hundred feet away, there appeared to be some buildings with a dirt road between them that stretched off into the woods. They found it hard to see, as it was dark, and there were no exterior lights aside from a couple of flaming torches. They stared at the quaint buildings and could just make out the sound of raised voices from inside them, until Sid made a hissing noise to draw their attention. Gilbert and Sid both looked up from their position, crouching behind a bush, holding on to their satin capes so they wouldn't drag in the mud.
"Get down," Gilbert said. "You don't want to get seen."
Maddie dropped into a squat, then reached up and pulled Brewster down as well. They waddled over next to Gilbert and Sid.
"Welcome back to medieval England," Sid said. "It's a few years before the wedding, on what is undoubtedly the single most eventful day of your father's life."
Gilbert said,
"Yeah, so far he's gone on a shopping spree, bought a new car, gotten arrested, escaped, led the police on a high-speed chase, crashed his brand new car, fled to the distant past, and now he's about to fight in a duel."
He pointed toward the buildings. Sid nodded.
"And it's in times of stress, such as this very much is, that one finds out who one's true friends are."
All four of them adjusted their positions to raise their eyes and peer over the bush. What at first glance appeared to be a few small huts clustered together in the woods, now, as their eyes adjusted to the dark, seemed to be the edge of a smallish town. Beyond them, many one- and two-story buildings, all made of drab materials, sat soaking up the light from the moon, stars, and occasional torches, without reflecting much of it for anyone to see. The sound of raised voices from inside the nearest building grew both louder and angrier, although it sounded like only one person was doing all of the talking. Gilbert said,
"Any second now, they're going to come out into the street. That's when the real fun begins."
"How do you know all of this?"
Brewster asked.
"Were you there?"
"Not as such," Sid said. "We weren't involved or present as far as your father knows, but when we heard the story, we had to come back and witness the spectacle for ourselves. In fact, even as we speak, we're somewhere over there, lurking in the bushes."
Sid motioned toward an area on the far side of the path. All four of them looked in the general area he pointed and saw the crowns of two top hats sticking up from behind a shrub. Gilbert and Sid both quickly took off their top hats. Gilbert grinned sheepishly.
"You kind of forget you're wearing them after a while."
Sid whispered,
"Silence, please. It begins."
People streamed out of the nearest building, many of them holding large mugs. A few held torches. More people lit torches as they exited. Soon the section of dirt road between the buildings was flooded with light. Martin walked out into the middle of the road, wearing a Harry Potter-branded wizard robe meant for a much younger and smaller person. He turned to face back toward town. Opposite him, Philip stood, looking exactly as he did when they saw him last, right down to the sky blue robe, pointed hat, and staff.
"He's fighting Philip?" Maddie said. "I thought you said they're friends."
Gilbert said,
"Just watch."
A hush fell over the assembled crowd. They heard Philip say,
"Whenever you're ready."
Martin lifted 3 feet into the air and stayed there, suspended above the ground without any visible support. He shouted,
"Behold!"
But his voice sounded odd, as if he were imitating a sheep or shouting through a box fan.
"Philip!"
Martin continued.
"Can your powers match this?"
"Let's see."
Philip's staff emitted an eerie blue light and a deep resonant hum. Philip rose 30 feet into the air and hovered above the buildings, twirling his staff like a giant baton. As his twirling grew faster, the glowing staff began to resemble a glowing disc, then a glowing sphere. The light grew brighter, becoming a brilliant white that illuminated the crowd below it and the town behind him like a small sun. In a voice both ear-splittingly loud and maddeningly casual, Philip asked,
"What do you think, Martin? How's this?"
Martin turned and tried to run, but didn't think to drop back to the ground first, so he merely twisted and tumbled in midair without going anywhere. He came to a rest hanging upside down, tilted at a sharp angle, and immediately threw up. The ball of light shrunk until it was just the pinnacle of Philip's staff, glowing as he floated serenely above the rooftops.
"Thanks for visiting us, Martin. I'm sure we'll meet again soon."
The ball of light shot from Philip's staff and hit Martin in the gut. Suspended above the ground, Martin offered no resistance, so the force of the impact sent his limp body flying out of town and into the woods at a constant altitude of 3 feet. He shot past his future children's hiding spot into the dark forest beyond, stopping only when he hit a tree.
"Friends?" Brewster hissed. "You call that being Dad's friend?"
Gilbert shushed Brewster, and Sid grabbed Maddie's arm, holding her back from her attempt to go help their father as he hung in the air, eyes closed, mouth open, and arms and legs dangling, while he drifted slowly, having rebounded off of the tree. Maddie tried to pull herself free of Sid's grip, but stopped when their mother appeared out of thin air, wearing a long brown hooded cloak and carrying 2 magic wands. The kids watched in silence as Gwen grabbed Martin by the leg. She withdrew her hand instantly after making initial contact, but then she grabbed him firmly and started rotating his body into a more dignified pose, standing upright, though with his head still lolling forward and his limbs hanging limp. She looked up at his slack face in the moonlight. She tried to close his mouth, but it fell back open as soon as she took her hand away. Philip appeared behind her.
"What do you think?"
Gwen said, "He's trouble. He's cute, but he's trouble. Why is he vibrating?"
Philip laughed.
"I think it has something to do with how his flight macro works. It seems pretty crude. He doesn't seem to know what he's doing."
Gwen said,
"Yeah, but that doesn't stop him from doing it. You should have seen him when I picked him up on the road today. He was totally confident and completely unprepared. That's why he's trouble. I say we banish him."
"Gwen, the lad just got here. We don't even know him."
"We know that he's arrogant and foolhardy, and for someone with access to the file, that's dangerous. We have a nice equilibrium going here, and he's going to throw it out of balance."
"Maybe."
"How long had you known him before he challenged you to a duel, Philip?"
"Less than 5 minutes." "Okay. Point taken. He's definitely going to throw things out of balance. But sometimes that's a good thing. Besides, we don't know what kind of trouble we'd be sending him back to."
"The idea that he might have caused a mess where he came from isn't a very good argument to keep him here."
"Maybe not, but it's good enough for me. I'm going to train him, get him all sussed out."
"Whatever," Gwen said. "Just try to calm him down before you bring him around to my place. The last thing I need is this guy slobbering all over me."
"Done. Thanks for coming out."
"Happy to. Anything for you, Philip," Gwen said, and disappeared.
Philip looked up at the still unconscious Martin.
"Don't worry, lad. We'll get you fixed up. I think you'll work out just fine."
He gripped Martin's wrist. muttered, "Transportee him," and they both vanished.
"So," Gilbert said, "you see now why we don't think Philip would do anything to hurt either of your parents."
Maddie said,
"But he did. You literally just showed us Philip hurting Dad."
Gilbert sputtered for a moment, his eyes wide, staring at Maddie, until he finally said,
"Not much! And he only did it after Martin challenged him to a duel."
Sid said,
"And he was exceedingly kind to your father after the duel. Far kinder than your mother wanted to be."
"Okay, I guess," Brewster said. "At least from this last bit, it looks like Philip is one of our parents' oldest, closest friends."
"Thank you."
"Which will make it that much worse if he's turned on them."
"We don't know that he has,"
Brewster shrugged.
"I said if."
Gilbert said,
"That is progress."
Maddie nodded.
"It's possible. Philip might not be our parents' enemy. But can you admit that he might not be their friend anymore?"
Gilbert and Sid looked at each other, each hoping the other would have an intelligent answer to the question. After a long silence, Maddie said,
"You have your opinion, we have ours. We can keep arguing about it, or we can get to work finding out which option is right."
Gilbert said,
"The only thing worse than a stubborn teenager is one who has a valid point."
"We admitted we might be wrong," said Brewster. "That's not stubborn."
Sid said,
"And now you have two valid points."